That creature protected you.
What is his name?
I don't know.
I name him, I keep him.
Hello and welcome to episode 93 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey everybody.
Hello.
So, first up, we're going to have a big review of The Good Dinosaur, and then our hot topic for this week, because the holiday is coming up, is our Thanksgiving theater picks, the movies that we would like to recommend you see over the holiday weekend. So, first up is Pixar's new movie, The Good Dinosaur, and I am taking that one. Here's the IMDb synopsis. An epic journey into the world of dinosaurs where an apatosaurus named Arlo makes an unlikely human friend. It's basically a boy and his dog story, but flip-flopped, where the dinosaur is kind of the boy and the little caveman boy is the dog, whose name is Spot. This was not what I thought it was going to be whatsoever, but I absolutely loved this movie. It's so weird and, you know, it might not work on specific filmmaking standards, but it's just so bizarre and out there. And, you know, I think I was on the edge of my seat during this more so than I was the large majority of action thrillers I've seen all year. It gets pretty dark and violent. Like, this poor dinosaur just gets the shit beaten out of him throughout the whole movie. And then when it jumps into the comedy, well, first off, there's no transition into the comedy whatsoever. It's like dark and then absolutely hilarious. And hilarious to the point that I, like, tears were dripping out of my eyes during certain scenes. Like, that freaking whack-a-mole stuff. And the funny thing, too, is that the movie is so freaking funny and then shifts so abruptly into something dark that I couldn't stop myself from laughing. So all of a sudden, the dinosaur is about to die and I'm still giggling from, like, the psychedelic trippy scene that happens before.
That actually sounds like a criticism. I mean, because, like, one of the things that you guys were complaining about the night before was that, or Christy, I guess, more specifically, was mm-hmm. that it veers too quickly between serious stuff and funny stuff.
I had a similar issue here where, like Perry, it was not what I expected. I think I watched the first teaser and then I've watched nothing else. I was like, it's Pixar, I'm going. So I'll just go and be surprised. And, like, as you guys know, that's a rare thing to get to do. I felt kind of excited to do that. And I like that what I was surprised by is it's basically a Western where, like, the long-necked dinosaurs are, like, are farmers and the T-Rexes are ranchers. And, like, that was all kind of really interesting and fun for me. What I didn't like was this movie is depressing. Like, I enjoyed certain aspects. Like, I liked the whack-a-mole section. I thought there's one section with a stegosaurus that was very funny to me. And will now have me in my head shouting Debbie whenever things get crazy. But, like, I was, like, Arlo gets hurt so much, and that was very disturbing, and I actually thought Arlo was kind of a dickbag.
So, like, How is Arlo a dickbag?
Well, like, he's such a whiny child. Like, you know, it's like his brother and sister do their chores, and no matter what happens, he's like, Mom!
But I don't think he is whiny. I think he genuinely wants to, like, get over his fear and impress his father. He's just, like, so genuinely scared of everything.
Yeah, but I mean, oh, God. I heard him screech mom so much in the first act that it was, like, really off-putting. And then, like, when he meets up with Spot, the boy, or the child, is he a boy? I know a lot of people are assuming it's a boy, but I'm not remembering if the film gendered him or not.
I mean, he's wearing you know, underwear.
Yeah, but he's, like, 5 or something, so, like,
I wouldn't think Pixar would, you know, dress a girl cave child that way, though.
I will say that I'm pretty sure the director himself has described this as a boy in the dinosaur or a boy in the dog movie where the boy is the dog. So okay. I don't know if they actually refer to his gender in the movie, but I'm pretty sure that everyone at Pixar thinks of that character as a boy.
Just kind
of
curious. It doesn't really.
It never even crossed my mind actually that it could have been a girl.
But I like Spot so much, and then I thought Arlo was, like, so mean to him and blaming him for things that I didn't think were Arlo's fault.
What?
And, like,
no,
and that's part of the journey. I get it. I get it's part of the journey.
To blame on him.
I get it was part of the journey. We can get into that in spoilers if you like. But what I'm saying is that for me, I just didn't like Arlo. So, like, I was kind of horrified, and also just the things he goes through in the first act are really upsetting. Like, genuinely, I was more upset watching this than, like,
happy that he went through some bad shit.
No, I mean, I didn't, like, hate him. I didn't relate to him for a lot of the movie. It wasn't until reviewing the movie later that I really thought about, like, what Arlo means and all that kind of stuff. But, like, watching the movie, I connected more to Spot and kind of thought Arlo was a jerk. And then, like, watching, but still watching Arlo go through all these horrible things just made me sad. And, like,
well, That's kind of what I was saying about this being more harrowing than a lot of action thrillers, because not only does he find himself in some really tough situations, but I thought it was a really interesting choice for the animators to show the cuts and the bruising that he winds up with after those
things. Like, he doesn't bleed, but he has lashes on him. They talk about how he's going to get scars. And, like, I did like the scar scene. I think that's probably my favorite scene, actually, where he's sitting around with other dinosaurs discussing their scars. And that really made me laugh. And I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
Handled the danger and the comedy really well. But, like, this is a Pixar movie. I didn't expect it to be so thoroughly grim. I think this is a grim movie.
I'm normally sensitive to that kind of stuff. And I walked out, like, with a pep in my step and kind of super happy and giggly.
Well, one of the things about Pixar, I feel like, is that, like, they kind of have a reputation for throwing things, material at, I mean, they're not just children's movies, they're for everyone, but, you know, everyone usually includes children, and they kind of have a reputation for throwing stuff at kids that you wouldn't necessarily expect in a kid's movie, like Up, the beginning of Up.
That's true.
Holy fuck, that's fucking dark. So I thought that, like, it wasn't necessarily that I went into this expecting it to be The Revenant, but I did, you know, like, it made sense to me that, like, if there was a studio that was going to put out a movie about an adorable dinosaur and this adorable little, like, you know, child friend, and it turned out to be really dark, it would be Pixar. And I actually think that I was walking out, and I feel like the people I was talking to after, including you, Christy, kind of had mixed feelings about how dark it is. But I actually think it's the kind of peril that is going to disturb adults more than children in a way, because I feel like as kids you kind of know the world is a scary place, you kind of expect it. As kids you watch a lot of movies where terrible things happen to children, like most fairy tales.
Yeah,
and it doesn't really register as terrifying to you because you don't understand what there is to be scared of and you already think of the world as scary. I think it's as adults that we see that it's essentially, the dinosaur is essentially like a 10-year-old boy, so you feel really terrified for him, but I feel like if you were a 10-year-old watching it, it would make sense. And I kind of like that this movie doesn't downplay, like, nature is fucking scary. The world is scary. Bad people are out there. Bad things happen to you. And I liked that this movie didn't, like, try to pretend, like, oh, they're on an adventure and everything's great.
Well, that's where I'm torn on this, because I think it's a really interesting message to give kids, and I think especially now, like, I tweeted about this, that I keep watching that video from Paris of the father explaining to his son, like, they have guns, but we have flowers. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google that video, and you will cry happy tears, because it's beautiful and sad and amazing. But, like, I think that's what it was for me. I've been watching depressing, dark movies for over a week now, because it's award season, and that is what we do. But I didn't expect this to be that, so I was really caught off guard. And I'm not saying it makes it a bad movie. I'm saying for me, this is not the movie I wanted, and I'm still very distraught over that. But I do think that you're right, and I think Arlo speaks to the fear children feel, where they are small and they feel helpless, and the world seems so big and unknowable and knitted with chaos. And I get that, and I wrote about that in my Pajiba review. I do think children will like this film better than I did. But, and it's not that I don't think it's good for adults or whatever. I just think that this adult was not prepared for this to be as dark as it was.
I came away with the exact opposite feeling. Like, I would never recommend that my little cousins, who are 3 and 5 and 3, I don't think they should see it at all. I think that it might be a little too intense and disturbing for them. And it could truly scare them, because it did truly scare me. And I totally hear the way that Angie is differentiating how, you know, a child might perceive this compared to an adult. And I think that's true in a lot of cases. But in this one in particular, I think kids might be scared by the rushing water and the lightning and the darkness and some of those, like, terrifying characters.
I'm just saying, when we were kids, we saw Bambi. We saw fucking Mufasa get, like, run over by a stampede. Like,
I'm not saying,
like,
it's unprecedented. I'm just saying it is not what I expected. It's called The Good Dinosaur, and it's like, diddly-doo dinosaurs. Like, I did not expect a lot of the shots we get. And also, like, the particular, force of nature carnage we get in this movie, like, was deeply upsetting to me. Just, I found it really troubling. And I don't know, man. I'm confounded, because it's such a weird movie that I'm kind of like, way to go, Pixar. Like, you guys made a movie that combines tropes from Westerns. There's actually shots directly out of Jurassic Park, which I thought was kind of funny. And there's, like, moments that are totally Lion King, and there are moments that are totally Jaws. And I thought that was all really interesting. I'm probably going to end up seeing this again this weekend with my family, because that is tradition to see a movie all together, and I think that's the one we're going to go to. And I'm curious, now that I know, if maybe I'll be better prepared. It's really, I was just so caught off guard. I can't stress enough how, like, that's kind of my warning to our listeners. It's not that I think this is a bad movie. I just feel like maybe brace yourself, because this is not like the do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I was caught off guard, too, but in, like, the best way. I was just so surprised. I almost didn't want to see, like, a rehash or, like, you know, Pixar trying to one-up themselves in a way. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to overlook the flaws, especially with Inside Out having come out the same year. I think I might have, like, had more fun with The Good Dinosaur than Inside Out, but seeing them so close together, it shows that it's like The Good Dinosaur is missing some sort of layer. You know what I mean? I can't, like, quite
explain what I'm getting at. Well, there's no B-plot for one. It's all Arlo.
I mean, just, like, some sort of, like, emotional connection or lesson. Like,
oh, well, there's a very hard, like, hard talk lesson where they just actually keep repeating what the lesson is. It's, you know, I mean, in the beginning, they're, like, making your mark, and it's, like, a literal...
Well, no, I know the making your mark. I mean, just, like, kind of like a personal takeaway. Like, some sort of, like, message.
To me, it just felt like the personal takeaway is, like, yeah, the world is a terrifying place, and you know what? Like, you have to go out there, and you have to kind of fight your way through it, and... I thought that, I think it's a hard message for kids, and not like a very like upbeat one necessarily, but I think it's an important one because the world is a scary place. And one of the things I liked is how much this movie emphasizes it's not about not having fear, it's about getting past your fears. It's about, like, you know, persevering even when you're scared and should be scared.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
We should, shall we get into spoilers?
Yeah, let's go to spoilers. So I want to move specifically into what I felt was, like, the fucked up part of this movie. And I don't even mean the beginning. I mean, they introduce, like, a cult that, like, starts stalking Arlo and Spot. And it's, like, led by... It's a bunch of pterodactyls who are storm chasers, and they worship the storm, and the storm provides. And, like, they're carnivores, which really catches Arlo off guard. And basically, they want to eat Spot and maybe Arlo. Whatevs. And that was really fucking disturbing. Like... It's not just that they want to eat him. Like, we've seen a lot of movies about animals that are, like, animated and whatever, and so, like, you know, them eating each other is a threat. But, like, they're sketchy looking, they're creepy, they're, like, weird meth head characters, and they're a cult.
And very distinct, the leader is very distinctly voiced by Steve Zahn, too.
Am I the only one? I feel like I'm the only one that was super creeped out by them.
I wasn't super creeped out by them. I found them funny and weird. The more disturbing part to me was, you know, the quintessential Disney movie moment where a parent must die. It's like, you don't even need to, like, I know that's going to happen before I even sit in the seat for a Disney movie. Like, if a character has parents, they're not making it through the movie.
If they have two parents, for sure.
It's like all kids' movies. The parents are always dying.
And I didn't mind that the dad died, but, like, the way he died was, like, so literally in your face, where he is looking Arlo in the eye, and because of the way the shot is, basically in our eyes, and then a fucking flash flood rips him away! Good God!
But there's two critters. I feel like the more we talk about this, the more I really do admire how dark it is. The other part that's really dark is that, so Arlo, when he first meets Spot, is actually supposed to kill Spot, which is something they are not playing up in the cutesy family-friendly trailers, because Spot is, like, basically, in their world, he's, like, a wild creature that keeps taking their food they need to store up for the winter, and then it's because they're going after Spot that Arlo's father dies, so Arlo blames him for everything that happened, which is really dark, but, I mean, the other thing is, like, I think that that also ends up being important, because, you know, it's not, like, it's not Spot's fault in that he didn't do it on purpose, but... I think as the movie goes on, he does start to kind of see, like, part of the lesson that he learns here is about understanding the world through someone else's eyes, in this case, Spot's, and he kind of understands, I think, after a while, like, why Spot was doing what he was doing and how he was just trying to survive, too.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
I want to talk about the critters.
Oh.
Go ahead. They're just so freaking cute, and the Triceratops. I think that was probably the biggest surprise of the entire movie for me.
Oh, you mean that, like, big Triceratops with all the, like, little, like...
That, like, that's, like, the kookiest thing I've ever seen in my life, and he's almost, like, camouflaged, and he has all these little, like, Like, I mean, they keep calling them critters. They're just like small animals from the forest, and they live in his horns. And
my favorite one was they cut to like a badger, and they're like, "This is Dream Crusher. He keeps me from getting my expectations too high." Like that yes! made me laugh really hard.
That was probably my favorite joke. Like Debbie or something, and it's like, "This is Debbie," and you expect him to say what her job is, and it's just
and he just says Debbie.
Debbie.
But then later, Debbie's fierce. She's a fierce little cardinal. Yeah, I liked things about this. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Oh, and then there's a part where they get fucking wasted. Yeah. I was not expecting that in a picture. So they eat, like, the rotten fruit, which is fermenting, I guess, so then they get, like, drunk. And it seemed crazy to me until I remembered that as a kid I saw Dumbo, and they get wasted in that, too. So I was like, all right.
That scene was, like, out of Ren and Stimpy. I had to lean over to Angie and tell her that in the middle of the movie. But, like, picture, you know how, like, Ren and Stimpy always made things crazy in almost like a slightly grotesque way.
Yeah.
So basically like an anti-Pixar way, but no, they went in the Ren and Stimpy direction with this thing, and it's kind of insane, out of left field, and I loved it.
All right, well, I think we should wrap. So where are we on The Good Dinosaur?
Oh my God, thumbs up. Go see it. I want to see it again.
I say go see it, but you should know ahead of time for adults and maybe for adults with very sensitive children that it is more harrowing than you would expect. It's like a PG The Revenant, I feel like, or something. Oh. It's just like the wildest, crazy place and crazy things happen and people want to kill you.
Yeah, I'm back in Angie. It's a children's movie about terrorism.
It's not about terrorism. It's about how
it's not directly, but like watching it right now, that's what it felt like to me. It felt like trying to explain that sometimes people are horrible and sometimes the world is chaos and you have to pull together and do the best you can anyway. That's what it felt like to me. To be fair, he also meets some nice people.
Okay. Well, I guess on that note, let's move into our hot topics, our Thanksgiving movie picks.
Yeah, so, you know, because it's Thanksgiving weekend and there's a shit ton of stuff to watch in theaters, some of which you may or may not want to watch with your family, we thought that we would talk about what we think you should watch over Thanksgiving, because we like telling people what to do. So my pick for this weekend is Creed, which is the Rocky spinoff starring Michael B. Jordan and Sylvester Stallone. It's directed by Ryan Coogler, who directed Michael B. Jordan in Fruitvale Station. It's exactly what you think it is. You know, it's a Rocky spinoff. It's a lot like Rocky, you know, which makes sense, but I think it's a lot like Rocky, but in a way that kind of makes it feel fresh again. Michael B. Jordan is incredible in this movie. Like, he's really, this is a movie that I think and hope will finally make him, like, the big, big star that he deserves to be. Sylvester Stallone gives this, like, heartbreaking performance. Another thing I loved about this movie is that it's got a lot of personality and humor to it, which I wasn't expecting. I guess what I'm saying is, you know what to expect, but it's better than you'll expect. And then the climax, obviously, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, it's a big fight, because it's a boxing movie. And the people in my theater were, like, freaking, like, cheering and, like, gasping and, like, reacting like it was, like, a big fight. Like, whenever if there were some parts where Creed would then, like, land a punch and, like, people would, like, start clapping for him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I actually totally agree with Angie and say Creed is outstanding. But for the sake of counter-programming, if you want something a little wackier, a little weirder, a little more what the fuck, I recommend Victor Frankenstein, which is a movie that probably shouldn't exist, but I'm so glad it does. It is a prequel sort of thing where you see how Frankenstein, the scientist, and Igor, his assistant, meet. And it's Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy, and it is so homoerotic. Like, I can try to explain to you how homoerotic this movie is, and you will not, like, you won't understand. I can't prepare you enough for how ridiculous movie this movie is. Like, 10 minutes in, there's a scene where, like, they're doing this really gross bit of business that is so, like, mirroring a sex scene that it's hilarious and weird, and then it ends with, like, McAvoy yelling, "I'm pulling out now," like, if you think that's funny, you will really enjoy Victor Frankenstein, because it is gonzo and the end totally falls apart and it's super bizarre and there's a lot of stuff in there you're just like, what is happening? But that was exactly why I enjoyed it. I appreciate, as you guys know, because I like Jupiter Ascending and I like Winter's Tale, I appreciate a movie that may not be good, but is fucking going for it.
Yeah, I'd say Victor Frankenstein really goes for it. Now, in a complete turnaround, my choice is a movie that we talked about a few episodes ago called Brooklyn with Saoirse Ronan, and it's the book adaptation, and she plays an Irish immigrant who relocates to Brooklyn, New York, and leaves her family behind. She's super homesick, but then falls in love with an Italian guy named Tony, and family tragedy strikes. She's got to reassess where she's going to spend the rest of her life. This is just, this movie is, I hate this phrase because it's used so often, but it's like an all the feels kind of movie. I was just so overwhelmed with all this emotion that I'm not normally used to feeling because I'm not super into, you know, like schmaltzy romantic dramas, but this one just like,
I know, that's actually really? Why Angie and I were worried about seeing it, because you came back from TIFF and said, Brooklyn's so good, you guys. And we started watching it. We're like, what's going to happen to this poor girl?
I know.
Like, it's secretly a horror movie.
It's just like real, like genuine, like love issues and like stuff with her family. And I just really identified with the feeling of like leaving home and feeling homesick. And then they do such a good job with trying to get you to play into, like, who should she be with? Like, who, like, where is she going to be best off for the rest of her life? I was just so freaking invested, and now I'm busy checking my mail like a lunatic and opening packages, praying that Brooklyn is the next award screener that arrives in my mailbox, because I am just absolutely dying to watch this over and over again. It's in select theaters right now. I'm not sure when you're going to listen to this, but it's expanding on November 25th, and it's just going all over, so if you haven't been able to see it, you could probably see it this weekend, so can't recommend it enough. Brooklyn is incredible.
And go back to episode 89, you can hear our full review of Brooklyn.
Yeah, that too. Sorry, I failed. So I guess that's it. You've got our recommendations and our Good Dinosaur review, and that's a wrap on episode 93 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know the deal, iTunes, where we would love for you to subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Facebook, where we would greatly appreciate you liking us. And then we are on Twitter as well, at Popcorn Prosecco. And all three of us are all over the internet. Christy, you want to take it first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And you can find me all over the internet, but I collect my highlights at decadentcriminals.com. Perry's and Angie are making faces because I love my own.
I think Angie's face is stuck on something for me. It's like it's a judgy face, too.
No, that was my face the whole time, because Christy was screwing up, and I was like, I know that. You should know that.
I had, like, I got an email alert in the corner, and I was like, what? And yeah, so I flubbed it. I'm on the interwebs, guys. You can find me on the interwebs.
All right. I'm going to ace mine. No, now I'm going to screw it up because Chrissy screwed it up. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. Boom. Hey,
nice. You can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is P. Nemiroff. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week.
Killer.
Stinky.
Violet.
Spike.
Lunatic.
Spot.